We've been told that we are a few minutes late, and we are going to stop on time, and I imagine the lights will go out once again as a subtle prompt for that. But I think we were supposed to be done here at 3:20. So if somebody is watching time and give us a prompt or two, that would be good. Well, and this whole thing, I have nothing else to present. We just found that over doing many presentations that we usually raise many more questions than we answer, and that you have your context that you're trying to fit all of this into. And so the plenary part of this is all kind of one way, and now this is the two-way part. So what I'm going to do is see if I can get this lavalier to work while you guys are thinking about it, and then I can just wander around and we can have a little conversation that as you guys have questions, and I can wander over to where you are and we can take it from there. But so just one second. But in the meantime, does somebody have a question? Yes, sir. Shout it out and I'll try to repeat it. Right. Oh, good. Works. Yeah. That's too loud, isn't it? No? That's better? Okay. Still here? Weird. Okay. The stages we derive from the review of the literature and from talking to people who do this work full time. I mean, like you guys do this work full time. And so for those people who have kind of an implementation team that they formed, we did interviews, and that's where we got the exploration and installation and on through. But the practicalities are that with funding requirements, and when you get a grant or you get a contract or the state, God forbid, mandates some of this stuff and says, you know, you got to get going, people then jump right into the initial implementation stage. You go hire some people, you have somebody come in, do some training right away, you know, that's week three, and you know, by the 6 month, you're supposed to be totally up and operational, this is what they're paying you for, and the evaluation starts often at that point too, so that you are supposed to be generating outcomes. And not everybody has the evaluation component built into their contracts, but many do. And so it's just that wherever you try to start in this, you're going to revisit all of those first steps, like it or not. And this is what we try to get across to the people who do the funding, that you're asking people to jump into initial implementation. They're going to go hire people, they're going to get things started, and then they're going to discover what? Well, many of the people that they hired are not ready for this. Many of the people who are in the system who have to change their referrals to you or change what they're funding for you, or there's some nuance in the certification accreditation standards that need to be made. All of this is going to be discovered after the fact, not during the exploration stage. So you're going to go back and you're going to revisit all of these things. And it is like everything. If you do it in a proactive way, and if you're thoughtful about it, and you're doing it in a sequence that makes more sense to people, I mean, you think before you act, for example, in this case, you can do it more effectively and more efficiently. So when you're stuck in the middle of just being thrown into it, and then you have to go back and revisit these things, that costs time, that costs extra money. You have people now who are disgruntled, who could have been on side before, now aren't, and blah, blah, blah. It's just a giant pain.
Do you have best practices for those first couple of steps?
Best practices, yep. And in the best place to start, by the way, is just to read the monograph. And again, you can download it for free off the website. The next best thing is to read the information on the website, which we try to keep up to date, but not always. But there's some more information there. And then, failing all of that, if you're bumping into problems, send us an email or give us a call or whatever, and we're happy to respond to any of those things. Every issue that somebody brings up is another issue that we learn from. So, oh, well, who knew that that was going to be a problem? So how are we? And that's where we become more active participants, to the extent that you would find it useful in helping you solve some of those issues. So, yes, ma'am. Okay, so we have kind of two questions, mostly around implementation team, composition, how much work is involved, etc., and then another question about champions. So the let's do the champions first, because you always need champions, and that's a lot of what we talk about on that leadership dimension. Probably for, I don't know, the 1980s on, we and others who were looking at implementation were really concerned about leadership, because things succeed because you had a good leader, and then they fail because you didn't have one, and it used to work and now doesn't, then wasn't sustained because leadership changed, so it was leadership. But it was all after the fact. So you knew a good leader by her results. But we wanted to, how do you create good leaders? What are the leadership behaviors that go along with this? And fortunately, in the last 5-6 years, there have been some really good meta-analyses of the literature and some very descriptive studies that have been done on good leadership skills. And that's where there are those technical leadership skills and the adaptive leadership skills. Technical, more managerial; adaptive, taking on very difficult situations and convening people and, you know, all of that stuff. So that's one piece. The other piece then is that people were doing, for the first time, longitudinal studies of implementation. And Phil Spanzano, for example, in Ohio, started out with about 100 evidence-based, or 100 agencies that were going to adopt one or more evidence-based programs. And for the next several years then tracked these organizations. She had some lovely measures of implementation, but it was all implementation. I mean, not so much about the intervention, one of the few studies. And so, sure enough, leadership was very important. In the beginning, you wanted to have the champion kind of leader. I mean, somebody who was well-known in the community, could get people together, did a ton of adaptive leadership, convening people, getting some decision, are we going to do this, not do this? So if we do this, then you guys put in that, you put in that. Okay, here's an issue around referrals or whatever. I know those people will take care of it. Now, leadership in the second phase of this, when they were more into the initial implementation stage, also was very important. But it turned out that the people providing the leadership now were different people. So leadership was still critical, just not the same leaders. So the people who were really good at being a champion were there during the exploration stage. But that was kind of their role in the community. You know, they championed lots of causes. This one was kind of on its way. I'm moving on to the next thing. But now you still have those people, though, who needed to help the organization get through that initial implementation stage. And still a lot of adaptive skills, but kind of managerial skill in there. Okay, now we're into full implementation. Leadership still important. So leadership. Another group of people. Different than the ones here, different than the ones there. Now you have people who are much more on the managerial side. How can we make sure that this organization is really supporting these implementation activities? How do we make sure that we're really doing MI the way it needs to be done? How do we solve problems around lack of fidelity. I mean, that's more than nuts and bolts kind of leadership. So leadership was critical, different people doing different things, though. So what is a champion? Well, all of those people are champions. And so we don't want to discount, who is doing what. But now we have a better handle on the skill part. The big question, though, is around the implementation team. And the implementation teams, these are 3, 4, 5 people. Excuse me. I guess I shouldn't do it that way. Implementation, though, is pretty much full-time work. And there's lots of ifs, ands, and buts around this. So how big is the organization? How many, yada, yada. What's the distances that you might have to travel if it's home-based services? So there's a lot of variables that enter into this. But let's talk the general case. 3 or 4 or 5 full-time people, and they're full-time doing the implementation work that we're talking about. So they are expert at the implementation drivers. They understand the implementation stages. They know how to develop staff competency. They know how to help organizations change in a pretty efficient way. They're helping to deal with systems issues around referrals and accreditation and funding rules and blah, blah, blah. That list goes on forever. That's just around the implementation part that we were talking about earlier today. The thing about here I am talking to you guys about this. I feel like, I'm this little tiny thing, and you guys have this huge wealth of knowledge. But at any given point, how many people, how many organizations are ready for change? If you say, here's this new approach, it's motivational interviewing, it helps you achieve these kinds of goals, how many of them would say, oh, pick me, pick me? Well, the pick me group turns out to be 15 to 20%. Of people, 15 to 20% of agencies who are, they've been kind of primed for this. They've been waiting for somebody to come along and say, we're going to help you do this if you want to do it. And they say, God, finally, somebody showed up, It's one of those. Well, and that's great. Yeah. This is a little bit longer story, and then we'll get right to you. But what about the other 80%? So, and it's the same thing again for motivational interviewing. You have the folks who come in, and like Bill said earlier, if they come in and say, God, I'm an alcoholic and I want to change and you're going to help me, well, you don't need motivational interviewing, you're just going to go to work. And so, it's the same here. You can go right to work on implementation. But the other 80% that are reticent or resistant or whatever, if in fact we really are going to help solve social problems, we don't want 20% of the kids to read. We want 100% to read. We don't want 20% of the people with addiction problems to get better. We want 100%. So how are we going to reach that other 80%? This is the job of the implementation team. So they are there. You go to visit agencies. You see what it is that's holding them back. Almost raised my hand, but I just feel like I need more information. What does this really mean? I didn't understand that part about, that facilitative administration thing that you had up there on that triangle. What does that really mean? Am I one of those or not? And so, okay, they just need more information. So, we know how to provide information. We can get them over that hump. Somebody else says, we've gone through, in the last 2 years, 5 different changes. None of them worked. And to have you come along and try number 6, this is not the time. People in this organization would run you out with a big stick. More scar tissue. Oh, my God. So there's lots of reasons why people are not ready. But the implementation team task is to find out what are those reasons. Can we do something about it now? For them, we'll come back in 2 years because, their staff will turn over and we'll be ready to help them get ready. And other people are just going to be so against this. They don't believe in data. They are anti-science. They just think this whole thing is screwy from start to finish, quite happy with what they've done forever, and they're just going to keep on doing it. Mike Fullen, who does a lot of systems change work in education all over the world, He said, for those people, there is a solution, though, because change for them comes one funeral at a time. Then you'll get to their organization. Yes, ma'am. Then we'll come over here. Oh, okay.
Probably a good idea.
You got the power. All right.
The way that I was introduced to implementation science is that it is about developing models of implementation and testing, comparing effectiveness of different models of implementation. There's a science to determine the best way to go about implementing new practices. So I'm part of my role in my job is being asked to get funding to do implementation science, to compare models of implementation. But I'm struggling with my motivation about that a little because I have, it's new and it is in the awkward stage. We were talking about that, but it feels like not practical or something. I feel sidetracked by the idea of that. Does that make sense?
Yep.
I wondered if you could just comment on that idea of, I mean, and even to write a proposal to explain how to, that I'm testing this model versus this model, but this is the patient outcome we're trying to get at is confusing.
Oh, well, the very thought of testing one implementation approach versus another is just kind of a stunning thought to me, since we're not sure that any of these work very well. So what are the choices? What would we compare with what? And how in the world could we do that? The problem with so much of the science around implementation is that it is not convenient to do this. The unit of analysis very often is a whole agency. So now, if you're going to do a randomized control trial, you have 30 agencies over here, 30 agencies in your control group, you have 60 agencies. If you want to do research on capacity building in states, what are we going to do? Randomly assign 25 states to, I mean, we can hardly do 2 states right now and keep alive doing this work. So the science around implementation and how we're going to approach this, I think, is going to have to take some adjustment on the part of researchers doing the work. Some of the very best implementation research right now, well, Phil Spanzano's study had no. It was purely descriptive study, start to finish, longitudinal, several years and still going. Fantastic data. So, I mean, we are so much better off knowing that, and there's no experimental design at all. Leif Solberg, who does research in the healthcare system in the state of Minnesota, absolutely wonderful stuff where he's looking at implementation factors, but they have 5 health regions in the state of Minnesota. He's doing a multiple baseline design across those 5 regions. So introduce it here, keep studying it in the other one, introduce it in the second one, keep studying. I mean, and you see, sure enough, things change when it gets introduced. And so the kind of research designs, and then you're stuck with measurement. Well, in that chart that we looked at for a while with the, here's the goal and here's all the activities all the way back to an implementation team. How many assessments of adult professional behavior do we have to make before we finally reach the children, families, individuals that we want to actually impact? Now, a lot of researchers don't like interaction effects. They want main effects. Don't tell me to go, but our whole thing is interaction effects. That's what this is all about. And it's interaction effects in ways that disturb everybody. So I think there, to get to the science part of this that you're talking about is going to take some doing. We're going to need some good examples. Fortunately, we have Steve and a few others who are taking this stuff on and learning how to do this kind of research in the messy environment. But the last thing, researchers don't like variability. They want to get this down, main effects, nice and clean, one variable at a time. That takes away everything we know about implementation. Implementation is utterly complex in all kinds of ways, and everything changes all the time. So in that environment, we don't want to take away any of that reality. We want to learn how to do research in that kind of an environment. But boy, it's going to take somebody younger than me to figure that one out. But in the meantime, we just need to keep collecting data. Can we find anything that works? Can we find these combinations of things that work? Fortunately, there are folks now testing out the triangle part of the model and looking at how those things are related to one another and how they're related to outcomes at the fidelity level. And that's going on, in Norway. But they have a lot of evidence-based programs have been up and running for a long time now, 5 years or more. So they have a very nice sample of people that they can try this stuff out on. So we'll get there. But boy, to pit one against the other, I don't know. We're going to come over here and then we're going to go to the back.
Well, thank you for this excellent presentation.
Thank you.
Implementation science is something universal, really. Looks very nice to me since I come from Barcelona, Spain.
Oh, excellent.
And I've been working for the last 10 years at least on the implementation of brief interventions in primary health care. And my guess 10 years later is that we devoted much less attention than needed to the very first part of what you're saying, which is the initial evaluation. So the question, is it feasible? I mean, we're going to invest lots of money there.
Yep.
And my question would be, if nowadays we have any tools, any developments that might help us to, in a rigorous way, identify barriers, obstacles, and all these kind of, for example, even competitive stuff, which is working against. Is there any tools, any ways that have been developed that we might be using if we started again now?
So the question is really about the exploration stage. Clearly, investing time, energy in the exploration stage sounds like a very worthwhile thing to do. Are there good tools for that? And everything you're saying right up to the point when you said rigorous tools, I was nodding my head. Do we have tools? Yes. Rigorous? No. And right now we're happy with having any indication whatsoever. Do we know temperature, blood pressure, and heart rate? We're looking for the grossest indicators of some of these things in the beginning stage. And once we find some variation there that seems to be meaningful, then start whittling this down into things that are more on the rigorous assessment side. But, for example, there is a tool that I've described to a couple of you that we're just putting together. I was working on the next revision as I was flying down here yesterday, and we'll do it's out to my colleagues right now. But it's a way of mapping implementation currently in an organization. So, as I said, there are people doing all of this work in one way or the other. There's somebody selecting somebody somehow. There's somebody, on and on. And if, in fact, there is one or more evidence-based programs that are being attempted or innovations of some kind or the other being attempted in an organization, this could be a smaller one, a bigger one, or a whole state, there is a way you can go in and start mapping the implementation landscape. Who is doing this work? And you're not concerned with quality right up front because you're in the exploration stage around this. Just who is doing it? Is it being done at all? And what you find out is so interesting. Lots of people, in one state, we looked at their early childhood programs that have been going on for 15 years now, and more evidence-based programs being pulled into this. And so we just took them one at a time, but a whole bunch of people were over here on the organization management side. So we do administration. Oh, yes, we have a data system. I mean, we knew it was crap, but, it was a data set. Again, we weren't into quality. We're just saying, does this exist, and who owns it? Who does this work? Over on the staff competency development side was where it got very interesting, because We almost had orphans over there. A couple of people said that they had some input into selection, almost all around qualifications. I mean, what was the minimum that you had to meet? An external group, a national group, did the training, so they kind of did the parachute training, you know, came in, did the training, left. And somebody else then, there was a hired TA group, did something like the coaching part. Nobody claimed anything to do with fidelity assessment. So over here we have duplication, and over here we have disintegration, we have fragmentation on the critical skill development side, and the one thing that drives change, knowing about fidelity, was missing altogether. So there are ways now with the, and this is not a complex thing to do, which is we're trying to design everything to be very, very straightforward. Now, is it straightforward? We'll find out as soon as we get people other than ourselves trying to use this. But at least there are these tools that are coming along. The work I mentioned in Norway, they are probably, 4 or 5 years ahead of just about any group I know of in the U.S. I mean, they combine research on the interventions with research on implementation. They have ends with the policy group. When you come to the Global Implementation Conference, they're going to be our lead plenary group. They'll have a panel there for explaining what they've done. Fantastic stuff. Great model for all of us. So, we have one here, but then we're going to the back. I keep saying we're going to the back right this minute.
I think I have the microphone.
You are the back. All right.
I've had an opportunity to read your monograph, or at least parts of it, and I'm very interested in your thoughts, or even more importantly, research about the whole coaching piece, particularly in the light of the fact that very often it's a supervisor who's also doing the coaching,
right,
where you might get role confusion and conflict, and I'd like to hear some more thoughts or even research about that. Who makes the better coaches?
Coaching is so important, and we know the least about it, and I think this morning I made allusion to the fact that selection is episodic, training is episodic, fidelity assessments are episodic, coaching is continual. So that makes it harder to know. And it has all of the interactive things. I mean, it's next to the treatment relationship, this is probably the next most complicated thing that we will do. So it's a complex set of things. And people have been trying to parse this out now for the last 10 years or so. Some very nice work in Australia with nurses, for example, and they were looking at mentoring nurses, which is like coaching, and the dimensions there. Sonia Schoenwald, who does a lot of work with multisystemic therapy, deep end delinquent kids, home-based treatment, has really looked at that coaching relationship. A marvelous meta-analysis of meta-analysis. So you have to wrap your head around this one just a little bit. But this also was done in Australia. And I think John Hattie, the author of this book, must have lived on one of the sheep farms or something for 15 years to put this thing together. He meta-analyzed 813 meta-analyses in education. So there were 52,000 some studies, 80 some million participants that were in the meta-analysis. I mean, mind-boggling. Interesting things, though, in all of this research, though, is that as important as, say, the teacher's relationship with the student, teachers teaching students, the therapist teaching, in Sonia's case, therapists working with families in their home environment, that the higher fidelity performance of the therapist, the better outcomes for children, for the delinquent kids. Even more important was the coaching provided to the practitioners. That had a bigger effect size than did any of the practitioner to, but why is that, you folks? Because, and it just turns out to be simple math. If one teacher, just to take that as an example, is working with 25 kids, well, let's say 20 kids to make it easy, and you have one coach working with 5 teachers, well, one teacher can affect 20 kids. One coach can affect 5 teachers who affect 100 kids. So you get this multiplier effect for coaching. And that is what makes the coaching role then doubly critical. Not only is it important for implementation just to get it going, but if you have a bad coach, you've now had 100 kids in this example who are not getting what they need. I'm sorry, I'm probably waving my arm in your face, aren't I? But if you have a good coach, then you get the benefits out of all that. So the coaching role is so critical. Breaking those things down, though, that's where that list that I was providing, these are kind of the core elements of coaching. Having a coaching plan, having that set of things where you're doing this in a proactive way, you're not waiting for problems to start, you're there. They leave training on Monday, you give them one day, and then you're there on Wednesday. And if you need to, you're back on Thursday and Friday. Because the goal is not to do coaching so often or whatever. The goal is to have these folks learn how to actually do this work in the classroom or in the treatment setting. So coaching initially happens more often. Then as people start hitting their stride, they start meeting fidelity requirements, then it gets faded out. But everybody gets coaching eventually. So having that, the direct observation piece is a critical part of it. Having that feedback loop that somebody over in this corner asked about, you know, what about, how do you know if coaches are doing a good job or not? Well, you're asking the coachees. As well as looking at the outcome part of it, because the relationship piece of this is so important. So it's starting to break down coaching behavior. But do we know what those critical things are? I don't think we're there yet. But that's where Steve's data and other people who are now looking at coaching in more detail will probably help us figure this out in the next few years. So coaching is very, very important. Lots and lots of data about that. Coaching behavior is starting to get parsed out into the kind of critical components, so we know more about that. But there was a third piece to your... That's right, the mixing of roles. And this has been interesting. If, in fact, in some cases where the supervisor and the coach are the same person, they then discriminate. We're going to have a supervision session, which is about administrivia and, all the stuff you have to do just to run an organization, or they schedule a coaching session, which is all about doing the intervention well. It's all about the clinical part of it. And some people are able to do that quite well. Other people, there's a supervisor over there that does the administrivia part, and there's a coach over here for the evidence-based program or practice. The disadvantage of having the split roles is that it is tempting then to start stovepiping your coaching. That you have a coach for MI, but now we're going to do CBT. Oh, we need a coach for CBT. Now, and pretty soon, as we found in one school, they had 7 different people coaching 7 different things in the same school. And they would sometimes schedule meetings with the same teacher. I mean, it got to be that ridiculous. But they did not have the conception of an implementation team that would know good coaching, and then you feed different content into that. So it's, but which one works better? What are the data to support all this stuff? We are 10 years away probably from knowing some of these things. But it's the practical, again, I think we have to create the laboratory. We have to start doing, this is what you guys are doing actually. You're doing this work, you're doing MI, you're doing it in all these different environments, and you have variations on the theme to study what it is you're doing, to learn from that from an implementation perspective is pretty exciting, because I think you've created an environment which a lot can be learned, and we can start teasing out some of these things that we're talking about here. But until we start doing things better and doing it on a consistent basis, which is what you guys represent, we will not have the data we won't have the laboratory in which we can pull the data out. As long as we just keep doing bad stuff, that's all we'll know about bad stuff. Yes, ma'am.
Two questions, if I may. The first one is to kind of dovetail when you're talking about the teachers and 8 different things they're learning all at the same time. I'm in an agency that has a lot of initiatives and a lot of things they want to accomplish, and with the healthcare reform and kind of the state of California and the state of kind of the world, there's a lot of need.
California always makes me shiver a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if there's any research or information about how effective you can implement multiple things at the same time, or, you know, if we're trying to make a judgment, I sit on the clinical advisory committee for the agency, so if we're making a judgment, then how do you pick the most effective? Obviously, my choice would be everyone's proficient in MI first. But if we had to choose, how many can we choose? Can you only choose one and then wait 4 years and choose another? What's that? So that's my first question. Second is, I've heard discussion back and forth about implementation teams and guide teams where you allow somebody on the team who's resistant in look but not resistant in attitude, meaning they're not necessarily sold on what you're about to do, but yet they're an open personality so that they can help be the negative voice, so that you know better the opposition you're about to see. And thoughts on that?
Yep. Well, the last one, and you're going to have to remind me about the other one, since I only remember one thing at a time. But the thing with the implementation team is what you need and what we are missing in the field when we're learning stuff. Where is the repository for that knowledge? Where does that go? Who accumulates that? And right now, you learn your stuff, and you learn your stuff, and you learn yours, and you kind of get together once in a while, and you may or may not. I mean, but there's no place for it. So if you have an implementation team working in an agency, you have a regional implementation team working with a bunch of agencies, you now have a place for all this information to go. What did we do? What did that work or not? The improvement cycle part of this, the PDSA, Plan, Do, Study, Act, you've probably read about all this a million times. It's very popular right now in health and a few other places. Been around in business forever. But you don't do anything without having it done in a planful way, which is what the implementation drivers help us do. Then when we are doing it, did we do it according to plan? And there's almost a fidelity issue then around selection and training and coaching and all of these things. But, and if we didn't do that, why did we deviate? I mean, there's the first bit of information that we are getting back. Well, gosh, it didn't feel right. Well, why didn't it feel right? Well, gee, we had the person who was saying and doing this. Okay, now the whole team is learning something about that. Or I tried this, and boy, that was kind of a breakthrough moment. God, tell me again. Kind of reenact that one for me, because I want to know. So you have a place then for all of this information to go. That accelerates the learning then for the implementation team. And when you're running into then the people or the organizations that are hesitant or absolutely not or scared to death or whatever, you're back there at the implementation team. I mean, we never go anywhere without doing a debriefing session after. So that's the study act part, and saying, okay, next time, how can we communicate that better? Next time, how should we approach that? Next time, how can we do training so it's more effective? Next time, next time, next time. So you develop a new plan, do it, study it, change what needs to be done, and that goes on forever and ever and ever. Even at the state management team level, the organization director level, and those are the people you need to get on side, you need to get them bought into this improvement cycle too. It's not that you're going to fix an organization and somehow all the people who did the work are going to walk away and it's all going to be just hunky-dory from now on. Never happened in a million years. Life changes in 10,000 ways and we will never know. So you have to build in then these feedback loops and have the people who can make decisions be full participants. This is their new way of work. So this repository of learning, that's part of what the implementation team is there to do. That's where at the Global Implementation Conference, I am so excited about this because for the first time, the people that we know are doing, I mean, like you guys are doing this work already, doing it well. Can you imagine when we get everybody together in a room and you all start talking to each other? Oh my God, I think probably there's going to be a firestorm over Washington, D.C. I mean, there might be Homeland Security coming down our throats. I don't know.
Dean, we only have seven minutes left.
Okay.
Just another one?
So I'm sorry. The first part of your question, though, was?
How many things can you learn at once?
That's a critical thing. And we really don't know the answer to that. starting with one evidence-based program, that is the place where a lot of this stuff gets built in the first place. That's where the implementation team forms. You get the organization changing. You get these feedback cycles going. All of that starts to happen around that one evidence-based program, that one innovation. Then you start adding in more. In Norway right now, I think they're up to 5 or 6, and this is after 12 years, but the first 3 or 4 were kind of the fumbling around part. But probably to do this on purpose, you could get to that number more quickly. But how many is enough? How many is too many? Don't know. There is a move afoot. I'm going to start moving in this direction. To say, what if there are common core components? We just happen to call that motivational interviewing. We call it over there cognitive behavior. Over here we call it MST. But what if there are 8 things that define all of these, the critical elements of all of these? Wouldn't that be interesting? So maybe out of the many, we'll come up with one. I mean, who knows? Yes, sir.
Dean, how about a lot of us in the room are mint trainers, and we, over the years, have...
I understood that when I saw the title for this
one. But I'm saying a lot of times we get approached by a specific agency. Let's, Rhonda here to my right. The XYZ agency calls her. Now, we know how to increase their readiness to access motivational interviewing training. We've gotten kind of good at that with our language. Even we use the piano analogy to say you need more than just one session of MI training. But what if you only had 2 minutes with an administrator? Because a lot of times we don't get a lot of time to try to influence them to do implementation. Do you have lingo? Do you have metaphors? What would you do with that 2 minutes talking to an agency administrator to get them to think along the lines of implementation science?
When we have a short time, and I'd hate to think it was only 2 minutes, but sometimes, and the higher you go, I mean, as you all know, the less time you have to deal with ever more important problems. So, I mean, down here we have a lot of time to deal with things that are more typical. Up here you have a few minutes to deal with things that are going to be mind-blowing. So, but the big question is, and only advantage to implementation is it helps to solve problems. So our big question, and this is at any level along the way, what is the biggest problem that you're facing? And what do you think is a solution to that problem? How are you going to do that? And who is going to do that work? So what is it? How are you going to do it? And who's going to do the work? And those are the 3 questions that we ask everybody at every level all the time. And the what is often there. Oh, well, we want motivational interviewing. We see that as the solution to the, you know, our probation problems or whatever it is. Okay, and how are you going to go about that? Well, now you're into shaky territory because not very many people know much about implementation. So they say, oh, we're going to pay for it. We're going to mandate it. We're going to do, you know, that whole list of ineffective things. Look on that list, you will find what their answer is. And so that's not going to get them very far. And you kind of gently say, well, that hasn't worked really well in other places. It depends on the person, but you just kind of let them go on. And who then is going to do the work? And the who is the stumper, because almost all of the current, and current being the last 30 years worth of talk about how you get science into practice is pretty much in the passive mode. I'm going to generate a bunch of information. I'm going to have some occasional training. We're going to have some websites. And I'm going to get this information into your hands and your hands and your hands. And you all are going to, we have a lot of faith in you. You're all smart. You're all capable. We know you're going to go make really good use of this thing called MI or whatever. That is the passive approach. But it relieves people at the decision-making level from a terrible burden. And the terrible burden is to create active implementation teams. So it's creating this whole capacity. And like I say, it's right where we were with computers in 1980. You know, you had one, I had one, everybody sort of had, I mean, we had whatever, and it was up to us to maintain them, and we decided what software to buy, and was this a good one, and how much memory, and blah, 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 and that's just not, didn't get us very far, so, but that's about where we are with implementation. Yeah, well, you have to find those things, like, you're right, that relate, and people, fortunately, the IT industry has grown up in people's current memory. I used to use the fact that there was a day when in the civil service there was no accounting system. There was no financial accounting. You got written a check and people said, we trust you to spend the money. That was in the early 1900s. So and then we developed a accounting system. But IT is something that people do relate to. And so that's there. I don't know how we're doing on time. I'm happy to stay here forever. So, two minutes. All right, sir.
I'm working with long-term applications, and actually, a lot of those questions, you know, there are clear answers for in the organisation.
I'll stand close.
So, what is the problem? People aren't managing their long-term health conditions, and there are unplanned admissions to hospital. Everybody wants them to manage it better. That's agreed. How are we going to solve it? Well, they've got to manage it. They've got to manage their condition somehow, and somebody's got to support them in doing it. Who's going to do it? Nobody extra, because there's no more money, and that's it. And there's no more money to put an implementation team in. And I know that's just going to be a line in the sand, because the NHS is facing 20% cuts over the next 5 years at least.
Yep.
So that's done. But the intent and the need to have the population manage their health conditions is absolutely paramount.
Yeah.
So as a functioning sort of fairly low-level BOD, you know, I'm looking at how to make the most difference most effectively. So I guess the short question to you is, what are the quick wins? Because I'm not going to get this. I love it. I think what you're saying is spot on. You know, if I had a magic wand,
but
that's not going to happen, you know, in my time. So I need to know what the quick wins are that can make the biggest difference on the ground for the client.
I agree with everything you're saying except the fact there's nothing like a good crisis. When we were doing implementation work in residential care for children, we didn't want to, I mean, some people at that time had their readiness criteria. Well, you'd look through the readiness criteria and say, well, if an institution, an organization, residential care facility would need all of those, they wouldn't need any of us. I mean, they'd be doing just fine on their own. Give us one that was ready to close down. And they already had the thing. We're pulling your license in 6 months unless you get this mess cleaned up. We are going to, I mean, some bad thing is going to... Those people were motivated. Those people, you want to change your organization? Please, come do it. Well, there was no quibbling about any of this. You want to talk to our board of directors every other week? Do it. I mean, and if you can help us weed out the people who come in with a, you know, drip on their arm, that all the better. So, just to describe one. So give us a good crisis anytime. So the current financial circumstances is motivating state and federal systems like we have not seen in the last 10 years. Because the need is there, just as you described. No doubt about it. Not only is it there, it's getting worse because of all of this stuff that's going on. So then the question is, how can we start reallocating our funds? How can we reassign some of our people? How can we repurpose some of these divisions? How can we, and re is always the thing up front, because these are resources that are already there. And are they, and the question that we asked then, and one I talked briefly about, how is this current system working? I mean, given the fact you're cutting here, cutting there, is everything going to work like it did before with fewer people, fewer resources, fewer interrelationships? Well, no. So it's already in turmoil, so having us come along and add to that a little bit is no big deal. Well, I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not such a big deal. And the notion that people are going to be scrambling around trying to find new ways of doing old tasks, that's not a foreign thought either. So, but boy, you better be prepared. I mean, that's what we have learned so far. The iron is hot, and it's only going to stay hot for a while before people get so discouraged and just go down a different path. But we have found more motivation right now in the last year than we've had in the last 10 years. But Thank you, thank you, thank you, and let's enjoy the rest of the day.